Well, welcome to the Situation Report for June 16th. And here we are on the precipice of World War. Yeah. So, yeah, fun stuff, fun had by all. So it's a shit show. I was just making popcorn. So after the show, I'm going to go out and, you know, send the patio away for the bombs to hit. Anyway, so a lot of things have transpired in the last couple of days. I'll probably be joined by a couple of the guys for the roundtable here in a minute. The short answer is this. Basically, Netanyahu went on TV and threatened, and it was a threat, saying if it's not Tel Aviv, first it's Tel Aviv, then it's New York. And at the same time, he's saying there's going to be a major attack here. They're telegraphing what they're going to do. They're going to conduct a green flag attack. It's all over. And here's the good thing about what I'm seeing on social media now is I'm seeing a lot of people on social media that are calling it out. They're just flat out saying it. Yep. If there's an attack, it's going to be done by the CIA and Mossad. Yep, I agree. Wholeheartedly agree. And the movement of forces over there, that could be innocuous. That could be just moving forces into the region to protect our bases. Because remember, we got 40 or 50 bases in the Middle East right now, and moving ships over there, et cetera. They're setting up for something, and it's probably within the next 24 hours. And like I said last week, that, you know, it was imminent. Sure enough, Friday night, they attacked. So I don't expect anything different this time around. I do expect, however, that U.S. aircraft will be used in some capacity, whether that's refueling Israeli jets, whether that's conducting strikes, who knows? At this point, it's hard to say. But that said, the short answer here is this, that Netanyahu went on TV and basically threatened the U.S. and said, it's going to be New York or Tel Aviv, meaning we'll conduct an attack if you don't step in and help us. You're seeing a coup against our president right now, in real time. And you're also seeing all the neocons come out of the woodwork. Look, if anybody's saying that we should be attacking Iran right now and it's full-on regime change, they're all compromised. That's the compromise group that's owned by AIPAC. That's what you're seeing. And at the same time, you're seeing a moment in time where the U.S. has a choice. And Trump's painted himself into a corner. He's created an existential crisis. If we attack Iran, he loses his base. If we don't attack Iran, then there's a false flag. Take your pick. It's coming. And most importantly, it's coming probably faster than all of us realize. So all that said, keep in mind the other thing. And I've been talking about this for a while, and it bears repeating. They don't have to nuke us to bring this country to its knees. They can conduct a massive denial of service attack or a massive cyber attack, which is what I've been talking about for months. And they could destabilize this country for months. And it would take a very, very small attack to do that. And that's how I anticipate this starting to develop. Now, do I think it's going to happen overnight? No, but probably within the next month. Every time they say there's going to be an attack, guess what? There it is. Within the next couple of days, next month. So be ready for anything, because I think things are going to heat up. And here's the interesting twist in all of this. There's a lot of reports that this attack was not supposed to take place for another 13 months. And it was supposed to be a well-coordinated decapitation event. And at the same time, it was supposed to take away all their air defense capabilities and all of their retaliation capabilities within the region. And look, let me be honest. I don't know how much of this video, you know, of bombs hitting both Tehran and hitting Tel Aviv that I actually believe. I was seeing video tonight of the 2003 attacks in Iraq, the airstrikes in Iraq, which are being replayed as if it's going on right now in Israel and Tehran, which is not real. And then on top of that, you're seeing all kinds of footage of, you know, the victims, buildings coming down, et cetera. Who knows what's real? Unless you're on the ground there reporting it and you're watching it real time, hard to know what's AI driven and what's real. And what supposedly precipitated all of this was the fact that somehow Iran got a hold of all the blackmail tapes for all the Epstein files and all the other blackmail operations that Mossad's been running around the planet, and they were going to release the tapes on the internet. Now, I don't know the validity of that. I don't know how true that is, but that sure would stand to reason that they would want to hedge their bets and move in now before that potential disclosure could happen. And I wouldn't put it past them to do it. But there's too many, now that said, there's too many signs that this was too well coordinated and too pre-staged for it not to have been already planned. So whatever you believe, you're seeing this play out. But the piece of this that is interesting is the fact they're basically coercing Trump to get on board. And there was an all-day meeting today at Camp David that Tulsi Gabbard was not invited to. Now, why would you have an all-day meeting at Camp David and not invite the director of the National Intelligence? Obviously, there's something going on there that, you know, we don't know about. Well, there's probably a lot going on there that we don't know about. But that said, we're seeing the situation develop rapidly. And it may not happen tonight, probably won't happen tonight. But by the weekend, I'm sure something big's going to happen. Oh, hey, there's Trip. Let me bring on Trip.
How's it going?
I'm living the dream. So we are, I was just talking about the escalation and the coercion that's going on and the coup against the president in real time that we're watching play out in front of us. And
Teddy made a point last term that Trump does not have a good picker. You know, he delegates stuff to big mouths and big talkers. They don't follow through. They're working against him. And he's like, oh, everything's under control. I got the greatest guy in the world. You know, I assigned all the important stuff to this great guy. Great things are going to happen. And then all these guys are working against him.
Well, he's always been a terrible judge of character. I mean, Susie Wiles is probably the worst choice he could have ever made. But he owed her, so he put her in office. So it is what it is. And look, I think that this is going to develop in a lot of different ways, but I'm curious to see what your thoughts are and how this is going to develop over the next 48 hours. Let's say the next 5 days.
I would say the Iranians are using a lot of their resources to support the drone deliveries to Russia. The Iranians licensed that technology so that the Russians can build their own drones. But they're still providing a lot of material support. Russia and Iran signed this really long, extensive agreement a few weeks ago. Basically says, we're friends. We've always historically been friends. We share cultures. We share identities. We share a lot of stuff that you would think Trump supporters would be talking about. Sovereign rights and the protection of our culture, way of life, and all this other stuff. I've said, and I continue to say, that Russia's threat is not the West. Russia's threat is China. Eventually, those guys are going to go to blow. So this agreement with Iran, and they talked a lot about the Caspian Sea, open trade, mutual support, all that other type of stuff. They fell short of, Russia will come to their aid, in the event of war. But the Iranians themselves have been laying out a lot of material support to Russia. And even though they have a pretty significant production capacity and they can continue to lob low speed drones, antiquated missiles, and some of the high velocity, Shaba or Shabab or whatever they are, missiles at Israel, there's going to be a ceasefire. And I think that the ceasefire is going to be brokered on what I believe is the Iranians. They've made 3 or 4 attempts allegedly at developing nuclear capability. It's, as you would say, the juice is not worth the squeeze, especially since they have such a close relationship with Russia and they have these high velocity missiles. So time for more of the trooper approved cough drops. Give me a second.
Well, I think so. I see a couple of things happen, right? So there's, Sean Ryan, predictive programming, talking about Taiwan talking about the Chinese moved in Taiwan. I don't give a shit about that right now. They want to stretch us thin. They want to, you know, run us into the ground in two different conflicts, which may, it benefits the Chinese. But I think the bigger issue is, well, at least the bigger issue to me is they're setting the stage for a major false flag. That's what they're setting the stage for.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, what Bracken was saying. And I posted some memes on Twitter with a bunch of red shirt Star Trek guys that are on the deck of the Nimitz, you know, heading towards their mission. And I made another one that had the Nimitz parked behind a staked goat on a dock. And it isn't, if you look at it, the Strait of Hormuz and the Gulf of Aden and the Arabian Sea and all that other stuff, we're already operating in that area. And the FA-18s, the fighter jets that are coming off of the carriers, they're doing an extraordinary job engaging the ABAQ and the Yemeni terrorists that are in Yemen. I'm still waiting around for Saudi Arabia to do something with all the shit we gave them. But as far as Iran goes, and I'm going to predict all the countries are eventually going to do a stand down on nuclear capability because of these high-speed penetrators. They're kind of environmentally friendly, and there's nothing that can defend against them. So you see a lot of defense budgets being directed towards high-velocity interceptors on the defensive side, and then high-velocity penetrators on the offensive side, and then slowly scaling down this nuclear inventory. And once one superpower signals that, and it's not going to require a START treaty, but it will end up with one, all the other countries are going to start drawing down that have nuclear capability. And I'm not a nuclear scientist, so I'm assuming they can use this purified nuclear material to run nuclear energy facilities, or they could use it for something else. The NNSA, the Nuclear National Security Administration, they're responsible for keeping control of all of the nuclear material that's loose from, like, after the USSR broke down, and any time there something goes missing, they're supposed to track it down. The worst thing that I can see the Iranians doing is taking any damaged nuclear material that they can collect up if there was a successful strike against these two facilities, and just loading that dirty material up on their fastest generation of missiles and then just lobbing them at Israel, like, fuck you guys. And then Israel may or may not shoot them out of the sky with the Iron Dome. And then a whole bunch of dirty radioactive material falls down on Tel Aviv. And then we have a whole bunch of Jewish refugees. So that would be, to me, the worst case scenario, where Iran would just push all their chips in the middle of the table, go, you know what, we're done. You're going to continue to attack us. We did this. You still attacked us. You want us to basically declaw ourselves, which is what Netanyahu said. I want no missile production, no nuclear facilities, no ability to defend yourself from further, Israeli attacks or air attacks of any form. He just wants them completely neutered and declawed. And the Iranians are not going to go for that. So
that's why he's doing a regime. This is a regime change. That's what he's doing. That's decapitation and taking a. So it hasn't been substantiated yet, but it was published yesterday in three different sources that Khomeini was taken out in the initial strike, along with most of the general officers. Who knows if that's true or not? But if that's true, then it is regime change. And well, I can't say that's a bad thing for the region.
I have to look at my notes in the drawer, like 10 feet away from me, because I had to look at that. There's a different kind of leadership structure in Iran. So you have the Ayatollah, and then you have like these senior level Ayatollah guys, and then a couple layers down you actually have the government, and then in the government there's an appointed group of people that support the government, and the president of Iran is is part of that. The just killing the Ayatollah is not gonna trigger a regime change. It's kind of how the Pope.
But taking out all their key leaders, taking out all of their military capabilities, taking out their. Here's the other structure that we're not talking about, which plays into this. Egypt and Iran are the same type of government, right? Their generals come into power. They're given companies to run. They're given property. So there's a huge incentive for them to maintain the status quo, right? And it's financial as well as its property. But if you take all of that away and you destabilize that regime, then you can set conditions for a regime change to happen. Now, will it happen? Who the hell knows, right? It just depends on how far this goes. I tend to think that this is a lot of posturing so that they can continue to do airstrikes until Israel's satisfied that Iran's, you know, sufficiently neutered, but who knows? There's a lot of variables here and a lot of different ways this can go.
Well, one of the things I don't think anybody's really paying attention to is that what is in between Iran and Israel? Like, what countries are in between? Because these missiles are flying over, and they have right of way no matter where they're flying. And right in the middle of it, you have Iraq and maybe even Syria, depending on what they're engaging, maybe even Saudi Arabia, you know, maybe even parts of Egypt. There's, you know, like, what are these missiles flying over? I'm waiting for one of them to have a malfunction and crash into something on the way to somewhere else. But there's a lot of connections here that bother me, these set precedents, and it ties into these two Democrats that were shot in the United States, is where the rules are changing right now. So the first thing is the attack on the Russian bombers that were out on the open tarmacs, that had no tactical value to the Russian-Ukrainian war at all. We just basically enabled a paradigm shift, literally a paradigm shift, where it's like shooting at the first aid guys on a battlefield where they have a Red Cross or a Red Crescent. You're not supposed to shoot at the first aid guys. You're not supposed to shoot at the medics. You're not supposed to blow up strategic nuclear aircraft when you have a treaty that says you're going to have those exposed and in the open, and oh, you're going to blow them up anyway. So there's a lot of things that are happening right now that are unprecedented. And the fact that, you know, the West helped, MI6, CIA, whoever, doesn't matter, but the whole acquiring the warehouses and moving to the drones and the assets, how well that operation was executed against those Russian bombers. There will be a movie about it someday, and it will not include Ukrainian pulling terroristic activity on Russian civilians and killing them. It won't include that part, but it will include the op. So there was a little bit of OSINT that the Mossad or whomever was operating in some nether regions of Iraq, where they were kind of doing the same thing. They were positioning some attack drones closer to the termination target so that they could get the close range, and then after that they started sending their missiles in. So there's these two things, and I said this with the Russian attack: you start taking out civilians, you know, like this nuclear scientist or these other people who are not General Soleri or whoever, you're taking out people like we'll just say like Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk or somebody like that. You know, a nation state now has full authorization to go, well, these people are involved in weapons technology or development of technology that could project a direct threat to our country. So we got to take these guys out. And the Americans and the Israelis did it with our academia. So we're going to do it to them. And now you have political killings and you have literal assassinations inside of a country. And I think that's what's coming next. And the harbinger for that was this individual that killed these Democrats. People are done, but at the nation state level, there's no rules anymore. There isn't any, the politician never went to the battlefield. Now the politician is on the battlefield because the battlefield's going to come and find him.
Well, I think there's two sides to that, right? I think that hit on those senators was a message to everybody else in the state. Because remember, the Somali mafia there runs the show, and they were voting on health care for illegals, and they both voted against it the same night they're killed. That mm-hmm. tells me that, you know, that's a message to everybody else. Look at what's going to happen if you don't get on board.
Yeah, stay in line.
That said, that's exactly what communist regimes do. So you're seeing, I look at a lot of these things as shaping operations, right? So the attack in Russia was a shaping operation. The drone attacks that took place in Iran, shaping operations, right? They're setting conditions so that they can conduct a bigger attack to draw us in, to draw the Chinese in, to draw the Russians in. And look, we're in the brass tacks here is we're not in position, or do we have the force capability to go fight in Iran? We couldn't occupy that place even if we wanted to. So that's not the goal. I think the goal is to flood that place with crazies, destabilize Iran, destabilize the region. Then Israel doesn't have anybody that's organized enough to oppose them. And Saudi Arabia's already said that they're going to be doing operations in Yemen, or at least in the area of Yemen. So I'm seeing this as, and again, I'm going to go back to the green flag, because I think, you know, Bracken, all of us see the same thing. In fact, when this kicked off, all of us said, almost in unison, false flag inbound. Literally, we all said it the same night. So I think we're all on the same page. I think Bracken's Fort Sumter moment was absolutely probably the best read of the situation, and we're watching it play out right in front of us right now. We're going to watch it play out in the Persian Gulf probably in the next week, and it'll probably be an attack on a U.S. carrier, probably blamed on us or blamed on Iran, probably doubtful that Iran would do it, because the thing that I keep coming back to is that Iran has literally gone out of their way to not do any direct confrontation with the U.S. or U.S. forces for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we've been hearing about the, you know, they're an hour away from a missile for what, 20 years now?
Yeah, the first one was like 95. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Oh, the weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, so we all know that's horseshit. But the part that concerns me, and I've been beating the drum on, is they don't have to hit us with kinetic weapons. If they hit us with a massive cyber attack and disrupt the entire country, logistics, supply chain, guess what? We're destabilized in 24 hours. And they don't have to do a lot of damage in order for that to happen. They can take down the airlines. They can take down fuel. They can take down transportation. They can take down shipping. And they can take down communications without firing a shot. And that's what I see developing.
Yeah, there's always a, you know, advanced persistent threat, right? The threat against the U.S. infrastructure and cutting fiber, you know, that's the easiest thing, right? I mean, especially these highly guarded data centers. I'm not going to go mess with a bunch of Teams guys that are getting beer money on the weekend. I'm going to go a mile up the street and blow up a manhole and just take that entire facility offline.
I don't know if people realize it, but Google had an attack on, I'm going to call it an attack, but Google had fiber lines cut on Friday. It took down StreamYard, took down Jamf, it took down a bunch of other cloud-based companies that were hosted in their cloud, and they couldn't do anything for 10, 12 hours. And it took down several logistics sites as well. And over the past 2 months, you know, I've been slammed dealing with attacks on logistics. I mean, all over the world, and mainly on retail sites, but the point's there that the attack space has already been increasing in tempo. And today I was dealing with something that was interesting, because the criminal elements have figured out how to go around fraud detection now. So they can go around fraud detection and operate in impunity. And that's going to be a problem for anybody doing commerce on the internet, because if somebody comes in, does a bunch of charges, it's 24 to 48 hours after stuff ships before you can even do the chargeback. And on top of that, you're never getting the goods back. So we're going to see a rash of that as well.
And yeah, that's gonna harm merchants. You know, not so much consumers, but it's definitely gonna harm the small merchants. You know, I build my my Trooper Care network bag of stuff, and people buy 10 of them, and then I lose that. I don't get that back. The customers that, you know, well, they'll get their money back, but that those producers are out of out of the stuff, their flowers or their, you know, honey or whatever they're selling. I wanted to kind of close, if I can, on this situation with the Nimitz. So that, I don't know, I'm assuming that the whole carrier battle group's moving in, right? Like the mothership is always supported by a constellation of surface and subsurface vehicles. And we have Saudi Arabia and Oman, and to some extent Kuwait, that are all, you know, right there within striking distance of Iran. And Iran, I'm sure, is well aware of the assets that are there. They're well aware that their neighbors in Afghanistan are now playing all the ends against the middle. They invited the Russians to come in and, Afghanistan's, neighbors with Iran. So they invited the Russians in to try to evaluate their infrastructure and modernize it. They invited the Chinese in to provide engineering support, plus all the land leases that the Chinese have. They're operating in there. They've invited the United States to come back and have a presence in Kabul with the Army Corps of Engineers to fix their runways and do everything that they've negated. So, I've been talking about that over the last, couple of months, is that's kind of an interesting paradigm, because we have India, we have Pakistan, and we have Afghanistan, and you got to go over Pakistan to get into Afghanistan, or you got to go over Iran to get in Afghanistan, or, you got to come in from China. So I think Pakistan, that is in very close coordination with the Chinese, and the Chinese have a strategic interest in Pakistan. They're providing them with military aid, money, leadership support, and everything else, because they want to kind of close in India if there's a conflict. So you got China over here, you got Pakistan, you got India on the bottom. But I believe that the U.S. is going to come into India, and we're going to have to fly over Pakistan to get to Afghanistan. Then we're going to do that. So we're going to stay on the east side of all this conflict space, on the east side of Iran. And I think the Pakistanis will allow us to do that, because the Russians and Chinese are going to be watching everything that flies over. They're going to have surveillance on everything that we're doing over there. And it's going to turn around on us if we go hot. Because like you said, we don't have the force capability to have a major deployment there. So it's more like communication, operation, coordination, right? Some fuelers might, end up being there. So if we go into a conflict with Iraq or with Iran, we are essentially going to get locked out of the Arabian Sea at that point, because they're going to activate all the Yemenis. The Iranians are going to lose their shit. Indians are probably going to turn their back on us. And then we have all the shithole countries on the east coast of Africa. So I would say that is a not permissive environment to have any type of war at all. And our fleets are just, all over the world right now. We don't have, like you said, the resources to really do anything there other than provide close air support and fueler support if Saudi Arabia and Oman choose to help us and India to some degree. Now, I don't see India entering into any conflict that includes a direct engagements with Iran. I mean, remember, they're both members of BRICS, right? So they know what side their bread's buttered on. They've already proven that they would turn the back on the United States by joining BRICS and by breaking the petrodollar model, trading rice and beans and whatever for oil. So it's kind of like the island of Saudi Arabia and Oman versus everybody else over there. And meanwhile, on the other side, a couple thousand miles away, you got the Israelis that are attacking everybody around them. And it's so reckless. I think they're going to bite off more than they can chew. They attacked Lebanon. They attacked southern Syria.
I don't think that's more than they can chew. I think they've carefully calculated how to destabilize the region. Because look, what's the one constant that's gone on in the Middle East since we went into Iraq? The entire area has been destabilized. Syria has been destabilized. Lebanon has been destabilized. Jordan's pretty much destabilized. The only one that's not, Saudi Arabia. All the rest of them, right around Israel, have been destabilized. Even Egypt is not in a place where they're ready to fight a protracted war. That's just They don't have the resources. So I think this is all by design. I think, and there's the other side of the fence, which is, if I can't control it, I'll burn it to the ground, which is exactly what we're seeing. So we're seeing multiple lines of operation unfolding here. But the part that I think is going to be very interesting over the next few days is what Trump does. Because Trump, if Trump was smart, and if you listen to Daniel Estulin on Alex Jones last week, if you haven't listened to it, I suggest you do, because he calls out everything needs to happen. And he's right. If Trump doesn't support Israel, they crash. Europe crashes. And we should stay the course. We should keep our forces safe overseas, but we should stay out of the fight. As long as we stay out of the fight, they won't have the ability to drag us into chaos, which is where we go next, or revolution.
Yeah. And I mean, Israel would not be doing this stuff if they couldn't hide behind their big brother, the United States, you know, military industrial complex.
They will definitely fight the last American.
We already have ships helping Israel shoot some of these inbound missiles out of the sky. We're already operating in the area. Everybody's on X right now telling Trump, you know, we're not going to fight this war. We don't want to get involved in this war. This isn't our war. And trying to educate people. And it's this whole term boomer now has taken on a new thing, right? So the boomers are like, they ended in what, 1964 or 67, sometime there.
It was before me.
But yeah, it's before me too. I'm Gen X. But if you say anything like pro Israel, you're a boomer now, right? And because the boomers they can't decouple our sacred biblical Christian teachings from the fact that there is an insane belligerent government in charge of Israel right now. There's a big difference between, oh well, you're anti-Zionist or whatever name they want to put on it. You have to support Israel to the bitter end. It's, you know, it's God's chosen people. No, there's an insane warmonger in charge. The only difference between Netanyahu and Lindsey Graham is one of them's in charge of a country, but that, you know, they still want to get the, you know, our country into a war. But if we took away their ability to wage war, they would either have to be better neighbors or they would get pushed out of the area. So I think if they threaten to launch a nuclear weapon at Iran, Iran is going to load up all their dirty nuclear material into missiles, and they're just going to swarm Tel Aviv with it. And we've known that the Iron Dome or any air defense system can be overwhelmed. I mean, that's not like an epiphany that anybody had. But there's a difference between Hamas firing just a bunch of shitty rockets off the back of a Toyota and missile tubes and more sophisticated, targeting type of missiles, and then sending a whole volley of them over. But
what do you make of Trump saying you should evacuate Tehran? It's a city of 15 million. It's the most irresponsible shit I've ever heard. But then I take a step back and go, wait a minute. They're saying the same thing about Israel. So mm-hmm. they're setting the stage for some kind of a nuclear exchange. And look, if Netanyahu is stupid enough to use a nuclear weapon in Tehran, the entire Arab world will be at his doorstep.
Egypt will steamroll into Israel and just take it over and annex it.
Yeah.
And the Israelis cannot go up against the Egyptian military.
No, too many of them. No, it doesn't matter how many bombs they have. There's just too many of them. So, all right. So let's, where are we at? Got about 20 minutes. So I want to, how do you see this developing in the next, I'm going to say 5 days, because I don't think it's going to be seven. I think it's going to be five.
We'll see who has the capacity to continue these missile attacks. If Israeli has, you know, if the Israelis have a bunch more rockets that they can shoot, because they have to replenish all their Patriots and all their ground defense systems, all their air defense systems. So that's a priority for them, because they can expect more inbound from the Iranians. The Iranians, like I said, they may have to shift their resource support from Russia. And remember, Russia's just north. Russia is basically keeping the terrorists in Syria pacified. They're the only grownups in the room, in my opinion. But the Iranians are working directly with the Syrian government now that reprehensibly we have validated. And then the Russians have an interest to remain in Syria. So the Russians or the Iranians, I think, are going to bide their time. And so there's two things. So first of all, I think the nuclear de-escalation is almost guaranteed. The Iranians are going to say, okay, all right, you know, we're done. Stop attacking us. We won't develop a bomb anymore. And all those promises aren't worth the paper they're written on. But the important thing is, we're looking at new technologies now. Just like drones, we have these high velocity, you know, intercontinental ballistic Mach 20 fucking things that can just blow up stuff kinetically. You don't really need nuclear warheads anymore. You have nuclear warheads because your enemy has nuclear warheads. So they'll cut a deal, and Trump will say, it's the greatest deal. I'm such a peacemaker. And we'll end up giving them pallets full of $100 bills. We'll end up buying oil from them at a premium. we'll end up opening up, international trade or allowing it with other countries. And all the Iranians are going to do is they're going to continue to bolster their BRICS relationships, India, China, South Africa. And I keep talking about South Africa. That's a big threat to us because the Chinese are influencing in there and they're in their anti-white thing. If we lose access to the Suez Canal and we lose diplomatic relationships with South Africa because they've basically turned into a Chinese province, that region is going to continue to get stronger and stronger and stronger. And one of the reasons why we allow Israel to do some of the dumb shit they do is because it's really our only force projection we have in the region. And I you understand this, but a lot of people are like, why are we in Israel? Why are we doing this? Like it or not, a superpower has to maintain dominance all around the world. So we have all of these bases. Why do we have all these bases everywhere? They cost billions of dollars because we are projecting force. We're influencing governments. We're establishing, intelligence gathering mechanisms. And it costs money to do that. If we lose Israel, we basically lose visibility to that part of the world. Yeah, we have an embassy in Egypt and we have an embassy in Jordan. We have, we have some basic diplomatic relations, but we don't have any big stick. We don't have any ability to control or project any power or policy. Where Netanyahu's gone off the reservation here is they're not supposed to come off of their leash unless they're told to or unless they're given clearance to. So with the exchanges between Hamas and the these smaller regional things where they were literally projecting a threat to Israel, they were attacking their people, they were launching shit over the fence. They were allowed to engage in their very brutal way of engaging, which is the roof knocking and then sending an F-16 to blow up an entire apartment complex. So, they kind of let them get away with that stuff. But reaching out and attacking Iran and attacking Jordan or Lebanon and, just preemptively because Israel's flighty, we feel that they might have been a threat. So we went ahead and attacked them and killed a bunch of civilians. And they keep doing that. That is not us projecting power anymore. That's us losing control in the region. And these Muslim countries are, everybody has this perception that they're a bunch of camel riding, Bedouins, and they have no couth or no sense of, acting as a dignitary. And it's quite the opposite. So if Egypt and Jordan and even Saudi Arabia see that Israelis now become unhinged and the U.S. can't control them, those countries are going to start talking again, and they're going to figure out what to do with their own problem in their backyard. And the way to solve that problem would be that everybody just attacks Israel like it's 1972 or 1967 again. They just fucking wipe them off the map. And if they continue to
coming, I think that's coming
through. I do too.
I think that's within a year.
And the Israeli people are very westernized, very liberal westernized, civilians. And the Iranian people are not that far behind. They all have smartphones. They all want to wear nice clothes. They want to go to war. They're not strong enough to survive a regional conflict that's directed at them this time. They're just not.
Well, I think over the next 5 days, we're going to see, I'm not so convinced of the de-escalation, the nuclear de-escalation. I'll wait and I'll believe it when I see it. But I think there's a lot of validity to that. What I want to see and what I'm looking to see develop is where and how we stage the forces that we're sending over there and what we're going to do with them. Trump said it's going to be defensive. Let's see how that develops. I'm hopeful that Trump will stay out of this fight and he will negotiate a deal. But if you're listening to Netanyahu, the guy's saying, if you don't attack Iran, we're going to attack you and we're going to blame Iran. That's what I'm seeing. I see something developing there because they've all said cyber and infrastructure at least five times in the last week. And so that's where I see that going. The other thing I see, and I think the staked goat is a good analogy. I see an attack on one of our ships and definitely see that happening probably within the next 24 hours.
Yeah. But again, I mean, you have the UAE, you have Oman, you got Qatar, you got Kuwait, you got Saudi Arabia. and they're like the grown-ups in the room, and they're like on the other side of this waterway where we sent the red shirt, the USS red shirt, Nimitz.
USS red jersey, yeah.
Yeah, so they're there. But this would be very bad for business if the Iranians sunk a United States carrier. Nobody's selling oil at that point. So yep. I think the Qatar and the UAE, the OPEC nations are going to get together. They're going to talk to Iran and go, hey man, look, chill the fuck out. Go ahead and develop your relationship with the new Syrian government. The Russians and the Iranians, like I said, they're already allies. And Israel feels comfortable because you know that this was planned. I mean, they wanted to take down Assad, so we got all these motorcycle riding chieftains to go and kill everybody. They didn't care if those all white Christians got murdered, but Brussels immediately validated the Syrian government. Immediately validated them. No question. No talk of war crimes or criminal activity or concessions for anybody's rights or anything. Just okay, you guys are in charge now. So that was planned. They planned that knowing that group of people that took down Assad was funded by the CIA and Iran and Russia. There was a lot of people involved in that. And Israel blew up what was left of their military to kind of, to protect them through Pakistan. I'm sorry, through Lebanon. But there's still a NATO presence in southern Syria that's kind of like a bulwark against any aggression from Syria coming into Israel through Lebanon. Israel attacked Lebanon. They attacked Syria. They're not worried about Syria. I think what the Russians are going to do short term is they're going to negotiate. They're going to try to get a bunch of financial concessions. They're going to say, okay, we're done with the nuclear thing. The same time they're doing that, they're going to develop the Russian technology for these high-speed intercontinental ballistic missiles because of what's the flight times, like 10 minutes to get to Tel Aviv from Iran.
Well, the hypersonics, that's everybody's watching the hypersonics right now, right? Mm-hmm. It's like what we're watching is a repeat of the 1991 war in Iraq, where CNN is standing in Baghdad and they're watching Tomahawks go down the street and hit strategic targets. Mm-hmm. Now you're watching those hypersonics hit with, deadly precision at speeds that they can't be intercepted. So it's an arms race now. And I think that arms race is only going to pitch up in intensity. What I can't figure out is why is it that we're not at breakneck we should be at breakneck right now for hypersonic missiles, autonomous weapons platforms. We do have some, but we don't have enough. Why we're not looking at the thorium reactors, the salt reactors that China's developed now, and why aren't we full tilt working to reestablish or rebuild our industry? I mean, we're not doing it.
And well, there's a lot of that, right? So let's finish with Syria. What I think will happen long term is the Iranians are going to be moving assets into Syria. They're going to develop a missile capability in Syria, and that's going to be the next attack on Israel if they can't resolve this peacefully. Syria is going to be the next forward operating base of the Russians. So I think the Iranians are going to the OPEC nations, Oman, the UAE, all these guys are going to say, hey, chill out. We'll broker a deal here. And then they're gonna have a clandestine operation in Syria. That's what I think with that. Now, as far as the advanced weapon systems, the F-47, that is a above tropospheric weapons control platform. That's not some new fighter jet maneuverable thing. You can mount rockets and missiles and bombs on it, but that is a weapon control platform based on the X-7B or whatever, long flight time, months up in the air. It can be run manned or unmanned. And we have all these people think drones, they think of some dude that's 500 yards away from some other dude and he blows them up with a grenade that's like rigged to a drone. The drones are a hell of a lot more sophisticated than that. You have subsurface drones, subterranean drones. You have, drones that can be deployed from what I call scarabs, I think Matt posted something about that, where you got like a larger aircraft and it just drops a bunch of drones out of it, like clones.
They're already doing it. They got motherships now.
These things, because you have the lithium batteries and the higher power sources. You could park these things up on top of building tops or mountaintops or anywhere in the world, and you know they're operating on 400 megahertz or whatever, and they can be just droned out, you know, just in an idle state, getting just enough of a power from solar just to keep their listening services active, and be activated at a moment notice, and you could converge on a target anywhere in the world. So it isn't just a weapons platform. Like I said, it's a weapons control platform, but distributing all these drones across the world. And my thing is, what happens when you load AI in it? And I think we brought this up in the past. Let's say, you know, a lot of research ships, Jacques Cousteau, he bought an old Navy ship, and then they retrofitted it with marine biology technology. But there's some drone somewhere in the Strait of Hormuz that sees this research ship that's been active for 12 years. And whatever conflict it was designed for, it still thinks it's in. And then it activates, it sees the target identification, it blows up a civilian ship because that's what it was programmed to do before it was abandoned. It's just like having a bunch of loose mines in the ground, you know, just deadly things that are autonomous that will activate and kill.
Well, I think that'll be the problem for the next generation that we're going to have to deal with, right?
Yeah.
We're going to have to deal with that. So, I think the next several days are going to be very, very action-packed. And my caution to everybody listening is don't take anything at face value the first time you see it. Wait and see for 48 hours how things develop. And see what actually transpires, because you're going to see a lot of back and forth. And look, the system is flooded with noise. I mean, it's flooded with it. And don't be surprised if you see denial of service attacks happen, and you know, comms go down all at the same time. That's just how this stuff works. So, I think it's a good place to stop. I think we're right at 45 minutes, which is where I wanted to be, and get a quick update out there. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
No, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. Remember, we still we have the Russians and the Ukrainians and the Israelis and the Iranians and the Chinese. I still think the Chinese are cocked and locked right now. And if there is any hard, heavy combat anywhere in the world, they're going to use that as an advantage, since they've weaponized the South China Sea at this point. That could be an impermissible environment we've been locked out of under the Biden administration, you know, allowing this to happen. But if they choose to take Taiwan and Hong Kong, which I believe they will go after both at the same time, your tech stock is probably going to be affected by that, right? Because what's going to happen in Hong Kong and Taiwan? People like Steve and I that work there are going to immediately start destroying intellectual property, destroying blueprints, destroying drives, destroying data, destroying anything that would be of technological value that could be captured and replicated by the Chinese government. We're literally just going to be shredding things as the Chinese are landing on the shore. So they're going to leave them with maybe some manufacturing capacity, but no design capacity. You know, the real jewels of Hong Kong and Taiwan. And so that the biggest risk I see in the next 3 years is what happens if Trump, Putin, or Xi die or retire, or something happens to him. Because right now we have three mature leaders and the three superpowers. I mean, with everything going on, we have three mature leaders. And if we have a fundamentalist take over in any one of those countries, then we're seriously in a potentially chaotic situation.
Yeah.
I mean, like, pray for all three of them, literally.
Yeah, agree. All right, with that, I'll be back. What night is it? It's Monday night. I'll be back on Wednesday night. I may have Troop with me. We'll see if I can drag him along, and we'll do another one of these.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
God bless, everyone. One team, one fight.
Hooah.